So it was going to be a film directly geared towards non-believers. But in the process of making the film and just in my Christian walk, I realized just how many Christians are not aware of apologetics.
That's very true.
And are not aware of the fact that there's good reasons out there for what we believe. And it's the believers who can be encouraged and edified and given this as a tool to have those conversations with non-believers.
You're listening
to the Thinking Matters podcast.
Conversations
at the intersection of
faith,
culture,
and reason.
Welcome to the Thinking Matters podcast for another episode. I'm your host, Todd Funk, and today I'm really honored and excited to interview Michael Ray Lewis. He's an apologist and a director of a film documentary called The Universe Designed. Michael, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me, Todd.
Good. Well, you know, I don't know very much about you at all. I just kind of discovered you. You blew up on my, you know, my algorithms are all about apologetics and whatnot. And so you blew up on my algorithms with this new film that came out. And I thought, well, what the heck? Let me just try, see if you'd agree to an interview. Tell me and tell us a little bit about your journey. I know that you were an atheist. How did you come to Christ? How did that come about? You've probably been asked that about 100 times, at least.
I have. I've told my story a few times, but it's my story that I think is impactful for some. And for me, it was the evidence. But for some, people like to hear the testimonies and hear why, what persuaded others. But growing up, I didn't grow up in a Christian home. I grew up in a home where my family would pretty much say that they believed in God. I'm pretty sure there was a Bible in the home, maybe under the bed somewhere, but we never talked about God, never talked about Jesus, never read the Bible, never went to church. And so growing up, it really just wasn't a topic of conversation. And as I got older and started asking like hard questions and being interested in the universe and why we're here and those big questions, I wasn't, to be honest, there was just nothing about Christianity that seemed appealing. For one, I didn't think there was any good arguments for it or any good evidence for it. And the only interaction that I had with Christians were the ones that were on the street corners that had the picket signs and were yelling at me that you're going to hell. And I didn't want to be a part of that belief system. But on top of that, I really just didn't think it was true. Like I said, I was given no good reason to believe it to begin with. And to me, it just kind of fell on deaf ears. I would watch documentaries by Bill Maher. I think it was called Religulous. There was another documentary called Zeitgeist.
Yeah.
And in these films, they were basically, I don't want to say poking fun at Christianity, but they were poking fun at Christianity and showing how it's illogical. There's no good reason to believe it. It's just Jesus was just a myth. It was a copy over all these other ancient myths that preceded him. And so there was no real validity to it.
Yeah.
But I think I kind of adopted the title of an atheist because I believed there was no God. And looking back at it today, I would say I was probably more agnostic. But I think atheist was just kind of the title that I adopted because I thought it was all ridiculous. I thought there was no good reason to believe it. And on top of that, like it was so easy for me to ask difficult questions to other believers and Christians that they weren't able to answer. Questions about evolution, questions about the problem of evil and suffering.
Yeah.
And these were...
And were those seeking questions, Michael, or were they gotcha questions? Because you knew...
Oh, they were 100%. They were 100% gotcha questions. But they were only gotcha questions because I thought there was no good answers to them to begin with, and I was never given any good answers to them to begin with. But no, I was not on a path seeking truth during this part of my life. It wasn't until later when I got married, and to put a little perspective on this, my wife, so she did grow up in the church, but she was pulled away by friends. Obviously, when we started dating, I pulled her away because I was a pretty strong atheist at this point. But about a year after we got married, she came up to me and she said, I feel like Jesus is calling me back. And I remember thinking to myself, oh no, because I had actually broken up with the girlfriend prior to this for trying to drag me to a church. And so this was, but I remember I was thinking to myself, well, I love her. I'll go see what all this is about. And I remember we walked into a church and this was the first time I walked into a church. I think I probably did when I was younger, but not that I could remember. But I walked into this church and I remember I'm looking around and I'm looking at all these people and I'm like, you know what? I get it. It gives them something to hope in. These aren't necessarily the people I see downtown yelling at me with picket signs, but I just don't think that it's actually true. And over time, we continued to go. And I remember we even took marriage classes while we went to this church. And I remember in the marriage classes, I was thinking, oh, yeah, these have got some good applications that we could use in our marriage.
Principles.
Good principles, exactly. But over time, I eventually got tired of going. And I figured all I need to do to stop all this is just to show her that it's not real.
Oh, you did the old Lee Strobel, huh?
Pretty much, exactly. It's funny when I hear about his story, too, because there's so many things that line up with his testimony with what happened in my life. And I remember when I first read his book, Case for Christ, I'm like, that was it. That was me. That was me through the whole process of reading that book. But so I figured all I could do is just show her it's not true. And so I started hitting her with the hard questions. But it's a little bit different because you can't really be aggressive with the questions to your wife. So you've got to be more gentle in the approach to it. But I would still try to persuade her that it was false. And she was not able to answer the questions. I mean, I hit her with tons of difficult stuff that she just wasn't able to answer. And she had even gone to friends that were Christians at the time to try to ask them for help. And all they would tell her was, well, we'll be praying for you. We're so sorry that's happening to you. We'll be praying for you. And so she was stuck in this predicament where I'm hitting her with hard questions.
Yeah.
And she doesn't have any resources or answers to respond to them. But she was adamant that it was true. She even ended up buying me a Bible. And I remember she gave it to me and she wrote in there, she said, let this Bible take you where you will go, and said, I love you. And I opened it and I'm reading through the book of Genesis. I'm like, 6 days of creation. This is nonsense. I closed it. I pushed it away. And
you started in probably the most difficult spot, didn't you? Oh, yeah. The most hotly debated chapters of the Bible.
Exactly. But at that point, I was pretty good at just dismissing it. Up until there was one moment where a YouTube video popped up on my feed. And I remember the title of it was Atheist Christian Turns Believer Evidence for God. And I remember clicking on it and it was a video by an astrophysicist, Dr. Hugh Ross. Mm-hmm. And it was him going over his perspective of the creation days. Yeah. I remember I just read through Genesis.
Sure.
And I remember that was the first moment where I was like, maybe there is a little something to this. And that video piqued my curiosity. And that was when I started a 3-year path of just actually starting to at least take a second look at it. And one thing after another piled up, and I found evidence from the beginning of the universe, the fine tuning of the universe, evidence in philosophy for the beginning of the universe, and the existence of these objective moral values. And all of this stuff kind of started to compile on top of each other. I started buying books by Stephen Meyer, Frank Turek, Hugh Ross.
Oh, I love Stephen
and
Meyer.
I just started diving into all of these resources for apologetics. I learned later that it was called apologetics. And at the end of the 3 years, it was starting to kind of become overwhelming because the more I looked into it, the more I tested it, the more Christianity was able to hold up to the scrutiny that I would put towards it. And all of the difficult questions that I had as an atheist were getting answered. But I was still resistant. There's something in me that didn't want to just adopt the belief system, partly because I didn't even want to take the title as a Christian. I mean, I saw what I thought of Christians. They were just a bunch of hypocrite, bigoted people that I didn't want any part of. And part of it was just, I couldn't pinpoint exactly what it was that was just something I knew in me, something was holding me back. And at the end of the 3 years, I started asking my wife questions about heaven and hell and demons and the gospel and how all this works. And she finally said, you know what? I don't know how to answer these questions, but I'm going to send you to a friend of the family who's a theologian and you can have a conversation with him. And I remember I wrote down 5 pages of questions I'm ready to ask this guy. I walked in the door and I sit down and I remember he answered every single question using scripture. I would ask a question, he would reference scripture, find it and respond to me.
So your questions were more theological or were they scientific as well?
It was kind of a mix of both, but mostly theological questions about homosexuality, questions about how the gospel works, why Jesus had to come on the scene. It was mostly theological questions, to be honest. And I remember at the end of the conversation, he looked up at me and he said, so do you think this is all true? And I remember thinking to myself, well, I don't have any more objections at this point. I mean, I had looked at this for 3 years, all of those evidence-based questions I was getting answers to. And I remember thinking, well, I think I do. But it didn't really sink in until the drive home. On the way home, that's when I kind of reflected and I thought, I actually think that this is true. And that was when I realized the fact, what was holding me back wasn't the evidence at this point, because the evidence was overwhelming, but it was the fact that I didn't want it to be true. And when I realized that, that's when I thought to myself, that's not a good enough reason. So I threw my hands up. I said, all right, Jesus, what's next? Gave my life to Christ.
Yeah.
And since then, it was like a fog left my mind. I could finally see reality for the way that it actually is. And it all became obvious to me. It was almost like I went from a state of believing that it's true to knowing that it's true.
How do you let the interject, because I forget things. I'm 63 and forgetting things all the time. But how do you, when you talk to people, how do you help them get from the intellectual to, okay, now's the time to commit, to take a step of faith, to do that? I mean, how do you coach people towards that? It happened for you in kind of a rare, unique way. But what do you tell people when you get them to that spot?
Well, the first thing we have to do is get them to that spot.
True.
And that's the most difficult part, because I think looking back at like my testimony and even in conversations I have with other non-believers, the reality is they have roadblocks. There's barriers out there that they've convinced themselves are the reasons that they don't give their life to Jesus. Reasons like there's not enough evidence. Jesus wasn't God. All of these objections that they have, they're roadblocks. And so what my job is as an apologist out having conversations with people is my goal is to figure out which are the biggest roadblocks for them and then tear down those roadblocks so that I can get them to the question of going from just belief that to belief in, so to speak, like Frank Turek says. And so what I'll try to focus on in my conversations is figure out like, what is it that is causing them to not take Christianity seriously? Is it the evidence? Is it the fact that they've been hurt by someone in the church or hurt by another Christian? Is it that they grew up in the church and they feel like they were lied to about certain topics, or they weren't able to ask the hard questions? And then they go off to universities and then they get the answers to all the hard questions that they have. That are an objection to Christianity. And so what I see it as when I'm out having conversations with people is trying to figure out what are those roadblocks? What is it that's holding people back? And then give answers in response as to whatever those roadblocks are.
Yeah. So you're a question asker. That's good. I find sometimes or many times is that people just hide behind science. It's a nice barricade to hide behind. You know, science just proves it all. But like you, if you dig a little bit deeper, you find, that's not actually so. That's right. A thin veil, isn't it? Yeah. So the people, I was Googling you this morning, and the people you have, I mean, you had some heavy hitters on the film: Frank Turek, Stephen Meyer, Lissa Childers, Sean McDowell, James Warner Wallace, Alan Parr. Are these the people that impacted your walk and so you wanted to interview them? Is that how you decided who to interview?
They are. So when I first decided that I was going to make this film, it's interesting because I was actually making horror films prior to this. As an atheist.
That's a little switch, isn't it?
Right. And so when I gave my life to Jesus, I was like, well, how am I going to make a Christian horror film? And then I thought to myself, well, that won't work. And I was like, I don't want to make Christian films because those are terrible. And it was actually my wife. She was the one who recommended. She said, why don't you do a documentary based on the evidence? And originally, all I was going to do is I was going to go find people who maybe used to be atheist and give the reasons for why they gave their life to Jesus, maybe the evidences that they found in their journey. And my wife said, no, you need to email the people, the books that you read. And so I did. I just started sending out emails, and one by one, I think it was Frank responded first and said yes. Then Hugh Ross responded and said yes. And then the next email I would send would include, hey, I have Frank Turek and Hugh Ross on board. Would you like to be part of this project? And it just kind of rippled, and virtually everyone I wanted in the film, I was able to get in the film. I don't know how the process happened, but it did. And so I was able to take all of those hard questions that I had as an atheist and sit in front of the apologist that helped me on my journey and ask them those questions. And so, yeah, it's amazing how the people that I was able to get into the film.
Yeah, that's really exciting the way that came together. And so are you a full-time Christian filmmaker now, or a speaker? You're on a network now? I mean, what do you do now for the most of your time?
Well, right now, so Universe Designed is my passion project. This is something that I just felt like God was calling me to do and that I needed to do. Through this, one of the root things, it's taken me 4 years to make the film, and that's because I've also had a full-time job in the process of doing all of this. I still do film production work. That's where my day job is. It's different things like business commercials. Sometimes it'll be on the sets of different types of films. But this is my first film as a director. And like I said, it's just a passion project. This is just something I feel like I need to do. Now, my goal, hopefully, is that this film will do well enough that I can continue to make these types of films and dedicate all of my time to the kingdom and just trying to make films that persuade people, that encourage people. But no matter what, from here on out, I will continue to do films that are apologetic related, because that's where I see the lack in the church.
And how do you see yours as kind of unique to some that have gone before? Is it the content? You have new content, or the presentation of it, or, you know, is it the cinematography, or a little bit of all of that?
I think it's the approach is the main difference between my film and a lot of the other kind of apologetic based films that are out there. What I wanted to do in my approach in this is, my goal is to reach the non-believer. And so I want to approach them gently. I don't want to be overtly Christian right off the top, because what's going to happen is they're going to turn off the film, not want anything to do with it. And so what I do in the film is I kind of take you on this journey to where you start with just the big questions of life, the vastness of our universe, the size of our universe that we contemplate on, things like that. Why is there something rather than nothing? Why am I here? Why am I here? Able to ask the big questions of why am I here? And so I kind of start the film slowly, gradually introducing you to those, to the necessity of needing to ask those big questions again, especially in a culture where we're so distracted by social media and so distracted by just the busyness of life and work. So my goal is to kind of get you to take a step back, ask the big questions about reality, and then seek to find those answers. And in the process of the film, then I start to genuinely to slowly take you through the evidences that persuaded me into just the existence of a God. And then I shift gears. There is a God. How do we know it's the God of Christianity? And well, that all hinges on Jesus. So then I kind of transition the film to centrally focus on the person of Jesus, ultimately delivering the gospel message and having kind of that call to action at the end to help you to realize, look, the evidence here is very persuasive, but it's ultimately up to you. What are you going to do with the evidence from here? And the goal with the film isn't to build an entire case, because I can't do that in an hour and 20 minute movie. But what I can do is I can pique your curiosity and hopefully challenge you to go and do the research yourself. And so I would say the main difference is my approach is a softer approach rather than just being an overtly Christian film. And I try to structure the film in such a way that you're not being yelled at. It's just, here are the facts, take it or leave it. Here's the evidence, take it or leave it.
Did you have yourself as an agnostic in mind with this film, or did you have yourself as a Christian that needed some apologetic grounding? In other words, who's it the heart of it really for, or is it both?
Well, the heart of it originally, my entire focus was to reach the non-believer. So it was going to be a film directly geared towards non-believers. But in the process of making the film and just in my Christian walk, I realized just how many Christians are not aware of apologetics.
That's very true.
And are not aware of the fact that there's good reasons out there for what we believe. And because of that, they're not out there sharing their faith. They're not out there talking about Jesus. And so kind of in the process of making the movie, my target shifted. My main priority became believers, because it's the believers who are going to take the film to the non-believers. Yeah. And it's the believers who can be encouraged and edified and given this as a tool to have those conversations with non-believers.
Yeah.
And so that's where I would say it is still a film geared towards non-believers, but now I think my primary focus is to introduce believers to the topic of apologetics and to encourage them, to help them to realize what we believe is actually true, to challenge them into being able to answer these difficult questions, and for it to be that resource that they can go have the conversation with someone. And if you only have 5 minutes with them, maybe they won't read a book, but maybe they'll watch a film. So either recommend the film for them, invite them to come watch the film alongside with you, invite your church to do screenings of the film and use that as an evangelistic tool for the community. And so my target didn't shift, but I'm extremely thankful for just what the film's even already done so far.
Yeah. How often do you find yourself before young audiences? Because they, in my opinion, it's my passion is young people. They need apologetics the most, because, you know, after they get out of high school youth group, man, the statistics are dismal, the drop-off rate. And I think part of that is because they don't know why they believe what they believe in, that there's a rationality behind it. So do you get behind, you know, high school, Christian schools or anything like that?
Absolutely. So I'm actually speaking at a college campus here in next week, the week after next. I'm going to take the film in there. I'm going to give my testimony, show the film, do some Q&A at the end of it. The target, this is definitely a film for the younger generation. I even have my 8-year-old son watches the film and he loves it. And if I can get him in front of the film and get him to grasp the kind of concepts that it's talking about, then we can, I mean, we can 100% get all of our youth invited into watching films like this. And I think we don't give the younger generation enough credit for how smart they really are and the types of questions that they're asking. And so, yeah, this would be absolutely be a film for the younger generation.
Yeah. How well received has your film been? Has it met your expectations or exceeded, or are you still hopeful for more traction?
So when I first decided I was going to do the film, I mean, this film took me 4 years to make, and it's been a long, long process. But one of the things I always told myself was that if it changes the heart of one person, then I will have done my job and it will be worth it.
I love that.
And since the film's been released, I've received countless emails of people that it's impacted, people that have been able to sit. We released it just before Christmas. There were families that sat together and watched it as a family with their non-believing friend family members that it impacted. I've received probably 8 different emails from different countries wanting to translate it into their own language. And so I've been taking different...
They want you to do that, or they want to do that on their end?
No, they're doing it for me. So they are taking off the subtitle file that I have in English. Uh-huh. They're translating it into their language, and I'm taking the file and uploading it to Vimeo, because Vimeo allows you to put any subtitles you want. It's a little bit more difficult with Amazon and those other platforms, but with Vimeo, I can just take these files, upload them. So we have Dutch, Polish, Spanish, French. They're working on German, Portuguese. So all these different languages are going to be uploaded on Vimeo and in the subtitles. And then we have another company that's going to be doing the full film translated into Spanish through dub. So it'll be dubbed in Spanish.
Okay.
And so the response has been overwhelming.
That's cool. You have any idea how many times it's been viewed?
I don't. I'm still waiting to get the most recent numbers. The last time I checked was a couple of weeks ago, and I think it was 22,000 streams. So we're getting up there, and it's the word of it's getting out there, and I'm excited. I'm excited to see what Jesus does with it.
Your film, I haven't watched it, but I'm going to, but I'm not going to watch it alone. I'm going to get some folks with me. Does it lead us to deism or theism or Christianity? I saw you had Dr. Mike Lycona, so he must be talking about either the New Testament or the resurrection. Where does the film lead us to?
So this is an interesting topic. I noticed a trend after becoming a believer when I watched Christian films. And it's an interesting trend because Christian films are not overly accepted by non-believers, partly because some of them just don't do a very good job of making it visually appealing. Partly it's because the stories, they're just kind of talking at you rather than showing you the story. Even in the midst of all that, one of the things I still notice is that a lot of the Christian films were not necessarily explicit about the gospel, and sometimes they weren't explicit about the deity of Jesus or who Jesus claimed to be. What I found interesting about that is like that is what makes a film a Christian film, because a lot of these films I would walk into and I would watch and I would think in the back of my mind, if I'm a Mormon or I'm a Jehovah Witness, will I walk out of this film feeling edified? And a lot of those films, I was like, absolutely. Mormons, Jehovah, they could watch these just fine. There's nothing like explicitly Christian about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things I told myself is like, one, I understand and appreciate the approach that takes because it does introduce people to the topic without overwhelming them with Christianity. But one of the things I see that's lacking is we still need films out there that are explicitly Christian. And so I decided when I was going to make this film is that I'm going to be very explicit about the gospel, going to be very explicit about who Jesus claimed to be, and I'm not going to back down on those topics, but I'm going to approach them gently. And so that's what I take you to. I take you all the way from the beginnings of the universe, where the universe came from, the evidence for God surrounding cosmology, the evidence for God surrounding biology, talk about the topic of evolution. Is there any evidence for evolution? We shift gears into, well, if God does exist, this deist God does exist, well, then how do we know, like, well, there's too many different religions out there. How do you know that it's one in particular? Well, that all hinges on the Bible and Jesus. So I introduce the topic, well, how do we know the Bible is reliable? I introduce you to the manuscript evidence. And then how do we know that Jesus is who he claimed to be in the resurrection event happened 2,000 years ago? So I cover the evidence surrounding the resurrection. I take you all the way through that if this is true and Jesus is who he claimed to be, well, then what does he say about himself and what does he say about you in reality? And then I go into delivering the gospel. At the end of the film, I kind of wrap it up with saying, this is where it is. You either want Jesus now or you don't.
And is this when you say, I, are you featured in the film a lot? Are you doing some of the narration and talking, or are you leaving the heavy lifting to the apologists?
I leave all of it to the scholars, all the people that are way more knowledgeable than I am. There were so many people that told me to put my testimony in the film and kind of narrate it, but I didn't want to be the focus of the film.
Was your voice or faith in it at all?
I think you'll hear my voice for about 30 seconds.
Oh, really? Okay.
That's all you'll see. Yeah.
Humility.
All the rest.
I love it.
The way that I structured it. So I ended up going and getting these interviews, and I ended up with like 36 hours of just content. And I had to condense the 36 hours into an hour and 20 minute film and have it make sense and tell a story. And it's amazing how the process and the Holy Spirit kind of work through the whole thing. But what I did is I structured it in such a way that it's the apologists that tell the story. And they do it in such a way that kind of takes you on this journey. And it ended up working out perfectly. The storyline is, I hope, that is impactful for people and it's able to keep their interest. So yeah, I'm not in it. I don't narrate it. I just use the apologist to tell the story.
Okay. And how much do you interact with evolutionary theory? I mean, you know, there's Christians on all different places in that spectrum. Theistic evolutionists, those that
right.
Young Earth creationists. Do you stick your head into that at all in the film?
Yes, absolutely. So we get into the topic of evolution, and we hold to the just evolution, not there not being enough evidence for it in the film, because one of the things we focus on is the missing links in the fossil record, the difficulty of trying to get new body plans just based on random mutation. We focus on the information embedded in DNA and just how like the structure of it shows similar in design, not similar in adaptation or evolution. And so, no, we wouldn't adopt the view of evolution in the film.
Okay.
But I do have young Earth guys in there. I've got old Earth guys in there. We don't address the topic of the age of the universe because I found out after deciding to make this film just how controversial that topic actually is.
Absolutely, yeah.
I had no idea. And one of the things that I've noticed is a lot of the young Earth camp will kind of group in the old Earth camp as evolutionary creationist, and most of them are not. Most of them do not hold to the theory of evolution. And so, yeah, that's kind of where we take you in the film.
Yeah. I sometimes have scratched my head. I'm thinking of an atheist friend that I used to have a lot of discussion with, and I couldn't believe how thick he was to some of the what I considered the irrefutable evidences, especially when it comes to the fine tuning stuff. Do you look back at yourself and say how did I stick there, or did you just not have enough knowledge? Had you not heard of the fine tuning arguments and whatnot?
At the time, I did not have enough information about all of it. I had no idea that there were certain constants and parameters and quantities that had to be just right in order for us to have the life habitable planet that we have. I mean, I always heard like the idea that like if you have a planet that's just the right distance from the star, it can have the ability to have liquid water. But what I didn't realize was that that's only one of 14 parameters that are required to have liquid water on the Earth. And so that was actually one of the evidences that was very compelling to me because I didn't know that. I didn't know just how impossible it is that we're here. And not only are we here, but we're here able to ask the question, why am I here? We have that consciousness that we can contemplate reality. We can look up to the heavens and see all the way back to the cosmic background radiation, the beginnings of the universe, just within this particular spot that we are. There's so many things that have to be just right for us to be here. It's virtually impossible. So the fine tuning was actually one of the most compelling things that I found in my journey. But yeah, looking back, I mean, to be honest, I think it's very easy to be skeptical. And so I was skeptical just about anything. I mean, you could throw something at me and I'd probably say, well, that's not enough evidence. That's not proof. That doesn't prove anything. Because it's very easy to do that. It's more difficult to take something seriously and take a really deep look at it to see, like, does it make sense or does it not make sense? And I think that's what a lot of non-believers do, is that they just become skeptical to anything that you throw at them. They don't take it seriously enough to take a second look. And it's the ones who do take it seriously and take a second look that a lot of them end up becoming believers, because they've looked deep enough into the conversation or into the topic to become convinced. Because if you're genuinely seeking truth and Christianity is true, you're ultimately going to get to Christianity.
Yeah, I guess it's like you were saying, there are several reasons why people, you know, refuse Christ and Christianity. Some of them are think they're scientific, but others are emotional or mm-hmm. you know, just will. I'm not going to have God or some pope or priest or pastor telling me what to do. I'm going to live my own life. Yeah. Yeah. So what were some of the largest obstacles to overcome? I'm sure it was a big learning curve to direct your own film and put it all together yourself. And you said 4 years. It must have been a lot of difficulties along the way, I would imagine.
No, it was absolutely. The most difficult part was finding the time to work on it. Because when I decided I was going to make this film, I had no money to make a film, but I knew I wanted to do it. And so I ended up putting together a website and I put a little donation page up and I was just trying to tell people what I wanted to do. So I put a pitch video, showed some of my work and would just start accepting donations and a little bit trickled in here and there, but not a whole lot, enough to kind of get me started with the first few purchases of plane tickets to go get the interviews. I ended up putting some of it on credit cards just to get the interviews so I could get something started. And then I think I ended up interviewing Elisa Childers, and it was after her interview, she recommended me to come on her podcast. Okay. And I'd never done a podcast before. I'm the guy behind the camera, not the guy in front of it. And so I was very nervous and uncomfortable, but I did it. And after that podcast, it was an instant, like $10,000 in donations came. And I was like, this is actually going to happen. And so I started really pushing it. But the most difficult part of it was, even though donations were coming, they were barely enough to just get what I needed done.
It sounds like, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It covered plane tickets. It barely covered the motion graphics, like the visual effects as I was going. Each year, I would do a little bit more and hire out a little bit more.
Yeah.
I did all of the editing myself. I was the one behind the camera as well as trying to do the interview. I would hire like friends to come and watch and monitor the other cameras so we could keep it going. And so like the whole process was just extremely difficult because this was time I had to take away from family. Because I still had a day job, still had to make money. And yeah. So I'd make money. I would work till 4 o'clock in the morning, just staying up late, editing the film. And that's partly why it took as long as it did. And I'm thankful for it because the timing, I feel like it couldn't be better for it to come out.
Are you hoping this will eventuate and snowball into where you can just devote full time into Christian apologetics and filmmaking and whatnot? Media
content? That's the hope. Yeah, that's the hope, is that I plan to continue to make films exactly like this. I plan to do narrative films, not just documentaries. I plan to do films that are geared towards giving the evidence in a storyline. I'm dedicated to helping other apologetic ministries and kind of improve their video work. And I've done some work with Cross Examined. I've done some work with other ministries, just trying to help them get started. Yeah. I'm basically just in it to do anything I can for the kingdom and anything I can for the topic of apologetics and helping persuade people of the truth.
That's awesome. I love your heart, man. Well, given your recent, you know, notoriety of the film and yourself, have you got much pushback from the atheist community or the Christian community?
Yes, I have. I've gotten lots of pushback from atheists, obviously, but yeah. It's just social media comments. It's kind of expected. You're going to get some of the ones that are not serious in their conversation.
Troll stuff, yeah, or is exactly. It stuff you've had to contend with? Like, oh.
No, most of it is troll. What I've tried to do is I'll respond to the ones that I can see or seem to be genuine. And I try to have as many conversations with people as I can. But a lot of the pushback has also come from believers as well. I've gotten some pushback from the Young Earth camp because I have Hugh Ross in it. A lot of people from the Young Earth perspective don't like Hugh Ross.
Yes.
And so I've gotten some pushback on that, even though I do not address the question in the film. I intentionally don't address it because I know it's such a hot topic.
Yeah.
Maybe the next film, but not this one. And so, yeah, but for the most part, there's not a whole lot. Like I've gotten more positive things said about the film than anything. And I've had some great interactions with just people reaching out through the email.
So Michael, looking back on your years as an atheist, was there anything that bothered you the most about God and Christianity? Was it the problem of evil and suffering? Was it just what you thought as the contradiction between science and the Bible? Or what was the toughest hurdle for you to overcome?
My biggest objection was that And I would always say this to my wife, is that I can't believe in a God who would send me to an eternal punishment just because I have a little bit of trouble believing in him. That was my biggest objection. But the reality is I didn't understand what was really going on. I didn't have a proper understanding of the gospel, the fact that God wasn't sending me anywhere. I was sending myself there. I was separated from God. And rather than him sending me somewhere, he sent Jesus standing right in front of me. And all I have to do is take his hand and accept the gift. And I was pushing his hand away and saying no. And so when I started to realize that, that was when I just didn't have a proper understanding of the gospel. But that was my biggest objection. I can't believe in a God who would send me to an eternal punishment just because I have a little bit of trouble believing in him. And it's just, and a lot of people, I think, don't properly understand the gospel. They don't understand the good news. They've been told repent and believe. They know the slogans. They've heard all the language, but they haven't been explained the gospel, why we need Jesus, what Jesus really came to do. And so I think when we're out having conversations with people, rather than just telling them the gospel, we need to explain the gospel. Similarly, when we're in churches, rather than just telling people to believe this stuff, we need to tell them why to believe this stuff. And so I think we need to be able to explain the gospel rather than just cite it.
That's good. And those of us that have been Christians for a while, we sometimes assume that people know what we know just because we've heard it and repeated it so many times. But many right. don't. Even with apologetic arguments, sometimes I'll define simple terms like, you know, the multiverse. Those of us in the circles know that, you know, right. what that is. And do you contend with that all? And for those who don't know, multiverse is the theory or the hypothesis that there are an infinite number of universes. And so coming up with one that's life permitting like ours was inevitable. Do you come across that argument?
I do actually address it in the film.
Do you?
I do. Yeah, because that's one of the explanations or alternate explanations to the fine-tuning argument. Because if there's an infinite number of universes with an infinite number of possibilities, well, then of course you're going to have a universe like ours because there's an infinite number of options. But the reality is there can't philosophically be an infinite number of universes because it would literally explain away everything. Frank in the film explains it this way. He says, well, if there is an infinite number of universes, that means there's a universe somewhere out there where Billy Graham was Hitler and Hitler was Billy Graham, or there's a universe somewhere out there where God does exist and Christianity is true. And so it's nonsensical. The concept of an infinite number of universes is nonsensical. But the theory itself, even the ones that don't hold to an infinite number of universes, but just a lot of different universes, still have problems because even the models that they put forth still need fine tuning and they still need a beginning. And so you're still stuck with the same arguments, the origins of the universe and the fine tuning of the universe.
Yeah.
And so either way you go, you're still stuck with the universe needed to have a beginning. The multiverse would have needed to have a beginning.
Sure.
And either one of them would have needed to be finely tuned. But on top of that, we're talking about concepts we can't measure. If it's outside of our universe, we're stuck. I mean, it's not something tangible that you can actually put measurements to. And so the theories are only theoretical.
Yeah. It strikes me as a bit ironic that people find it difficult to believe in a single God that they can't see or hear or feel or experience empirically, but yet have no problem believing in an infinite number of universes that they cannot detect or have any evidence for.
Right.
Yeah. Amazing that. So kind of begin to wind it down, but are there any questions that you get asked that you enjoy answering that I haven't maybe asked?
No, I don't think so. I think you've covered a lot.
Oh, good. Good for that. Well, so.
Yeah, I think so.
Outside of kind of ministry and filmmaking and apologetics, what do you enjoy personally that helps you kind of relax? You got any hobbies or outside interests that you enjoy that just helps you stay grounded?
Well, apologetics is my hobby. I love studying apologetics. I love learning as much as I can about God. And so I would say that and filmmaking is my absolute hobby. But I also, my wife. So we live in Texas and we have a little farm here. So we've got horses. And so we will occasionally go on trail rides and go ride horses together on date nights. And so that's a good refreshing kind of take your mind away from some things and just enjoy yeah. God's creation. Those are fun. Yeah. But yeah, my passion is 100%. And it's crazy too, because from where I came from, in making horror films, I was obsessed with horror films. It's like everything about my perspective of reality changed to such an extent that now, like, all I care about is trying to understand the God that created me. And I think that it's crazy what God's done in my life.
Are there films like horror films? Do you refuse to do them anymore? Or do you have to kind of do some of that stuff to put the food on the table?
Well, I was still working on horror films even after giving my life to Christ.
Okay.
Because that's probably what paid the bills. So it was just one of the things that helped. I haven't been asked to do one in a while. I would probably reject it at this point. Because there are certain things morally I can't do anymore.
Yeah.
Just my conscience won't allow for it. And so it depends on what the projects are, the projects that come up. There are a lot that I've rejected and chosen not to do, just for my own conscience, my own sanity. And so, but yeah, the goal is hopefully to continue to just do films for the kingdom. We'll see what happens with Universe Design. I'm basically, what I'm doing is I'm taking all the money that this film makes, and I'm going to put it into the next project, and I'm going to be able to continue to keep making these. And I haven't decided if I'm going to structure it in more like a ministry and kind of put like a ministry umbrella behind it, or just continue just making films and doing it the way I've been doing it. But one way or another, I'm just going to keep sharing the gospel as much as I can.
And I love that heart, and I love that passion, and I hope that I pray that it never goes away. You know, you keep Christ and the gospel as the central focus, the main thing. Sometimes I'll include myself, apologists, we get so bogged down with the evidence and stuff that we forget that it all boils down to Jesus Christ and what he's done for us. And that's right. the main thing, isn't it? The main
exactly.
thing. Yeah. So ask every guest, I said, what waters your soul the most as a Christian? You know, makes your walk with God stay fresh and vibrant and personal. Yeah, well, how would you answer that, Michael?
Two things, actually. One is sharing the gospel. There's something about being on the streets and just having a conversation with someone about Jesus that at the end of that conversation, there's just something that happens in those moments. And I don't know if it's the Holy Spirit just working and you get to experience the Holy Spirit through that process. I don't know if it's just the excitement of reminding myself that this is all real and that there's really good evidence for it. I don't know if it's getting to see the change in people when you have those conversations. But that, if I ever feel like I'm feeling distant from God, that's one thing that always helps.
Yeah.
And then also equipping believers, having conversations with believers would be the other thing. Teaching classes on apologetics, reminding anything that has to do with talking about God or meditating on God, with having conversations with others, that would absolutely be what constantly reminds me, constantly feeds my soul, you could say, would absolutely be having those conversations.
So do you teach apologetics like at your church, or where do you teach apologetics?
At the church. Yeah. So at the church that I originally was going to, whenever I was an atheist, was the church I became a believer in, and the church I still attend.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I ended up teaching apologetics there because they didn't have an apologetics ministry.
Not uncommon.
And really, I'll just find a group of guys and do Zoom calls, do like some studies through Zoom calls. And so I try any way I can to have conversations with people and do studies and teach as much as I can.
Yeah. Yeah. If people want to contact you or get a hold of the movie, they go to theuniversedesigned.com. Is that correct?
That's right. On the website, there's two things you need to know about on the website. There's a contact form, so you can absolutely reach that to just reach me or contact me. But we also have a resource tab on there. And so the goal of the film, like I said before, is just to pique your curiosity. And so once you've had it pique your curiosity, I don't want to leave you hanging. And so I gave you a resources tab on the website for you to go and do more research on the topic. And under that tab, it has all of the ministries of all of the apologists, of all the ones in the films, and then some that weren't in the film, but were still impactful to me.
Well, nice. Very good. Very good. Well, Michael, thank you for taking the time to be with us today and just share your heart and share your passions and a little bit about the film. Really appreciate you being here. Make sure you subscribe to the Thinking Matters podcast so you can see more interesting interviews with people like Michael and allow your faith to grow stronger. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. God bless.
For more reasons why we believe,
or to support this ministry, go to
thinkingmatters.org.nz.